Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The Sands are running fast.
And this is America, the front line in the fight to save democracy.
Costs are way down. Groceries are way. They have a term, grocery. It's an old term, but it means basically what you're buying, food. It's a pretty accurate term, but it's an old-fashioned sound. But groceries are down.
Huh? Sorry, Tudal Donnie. All we hear is the old-fashioned sound of prices going up, way up, thanks to your tariffs, that Trump tax. This is America. I'm Rachel Bitticopper.
And I'm Aaron Murphy. We've got so much to cover today as POTUS picks a losing fight with America's largest retailer.
Walmart warns it may start rising prices because of those tariffs. That includes groceries.
You know shit is getting real when Walmart announces it can no longer afford low prices, right? And they're basically saying, look, dude, we can't live in your alt reality. This week's show is going to be an important one, folks. You should see how many texts Aaron and I have exchanged about all these really super crazy things that got buried in other headlines over the last few days. There was a scary shakeup in the national intelligence agencies, a rare truth bomb from Trump's FBI, and some, you know, sort of spicy criticisms served up Mike Pence style.
But first, let's stick with Walmart, which says it's rolling up prices in something you don't see every day, a major American corporation warning about higher costs and putting the blame right where it belongs, on the Trump tax. In response, Trump went into full communist dictator mode. Here's our AI reading of his actual post on social media.
Between Walmart and China, they should, as is said, eat the tariffs and not charge valued customers anything. I'll be watching, and so will your customers.
Let them eat tariffs, Aaron. And by the way, eat the tariffs was in all caps. I have a feeling this isn't going to end well for us, the American consumer, especially the ones that voted for Trump, who might realize now Donald Trump doesn't give a fuck about you. He's too busy being wooed by a $500 million gift from Qatar. Hamas won, a private luxury plane he gets to use after his presidency, if his presidency ever ends, despite the fact the Constitution outlaws gifts like this for American presidents. Even Trump 1.0, way back in 2017, would have agreed. In fact, here he is with some choice words for Qatar.
The nation of Qatar, unfortunately, has historically been a funder of terrorism at a very high level. Nations came together and spoke to me about confronting Qatar over its behavior.
This means there's now a price on what it takes to change Trump's mind and buy respect and influence. Just a $400 million luxury jetliner, which is, I have to point out, actually a used plane. A used plane or a used car salesman.
But it's probably a pretty nice one. Rachel, speaking of alternate facts and realities, let's talk about a lesser-noticed story from the past week involving Tulsi Gabbard.
Ah, turncoat Tulsi. Yes. I mean, Director of National Intelligence.
Well, Tulsi Gabbard fired the chairman of the National Intelligence Council, a guy named Mike Collins, and his deputy. Both of them have served in U.S. intelligence for decades. Their sin, Gabbard says, they opposed Trump. Not a lot of details, sounds familiar, but the move does follow an intelligence memo that was declassified earlier this month. That memo contradicted Trump's claim that the Venezuelan government coordinated with the gang Tren de Aragua. That, of course, is what justified the arrest and deportation without due process of dozens of Venezuelan nationals a few weeks ago. Oh, and Tulsi Gabbard also took it upon herself to directly oversee the president's daily intelligence briefings.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Okay. So, number one, Trump isn't reading most of his daily intelligence briefs. He didn't read them the first time, so I really fucking doubt he's reading them the second time. But here's the problem. What they want to do now is have Tulsi pre-screen all of those memos for reality, guys. I mean, that's what her job will be, like, keep reality away from the boss. And that's kind of a problem, right? Because we're not talking about the boss of Uber. Okay, we're talking about the boss of the most powerful country on earth. And it turns out, you know, like there's a parallel. You might be shocked, Aaron. There's a parallel to this with Adolf Hitler.
You don't say.
One of the reasons the Nazis lost the war was that Hitler was very Trump-like in that his complete embrace and utter disregard of real reality, right? So he constructed a reality. in which there were certain facts that were, you know, absolutely true. And in that reality land is how he conducted the war. And he ran into generals who were like, yeah, but we don't actually have that army. And it's so disconcerting to know that, like, you know, they want to screen reality out of the Oval Office.
And Rachel, you tweeted a picture out of Washington, D.C. depicting a 40-foot banner. It's being hung between the giant columns of the Department of Agriculture building. What the hell is this all about?
Yeah, dude, he's going full Putin. I mean, Kim Jong Don Un, right? We're going to have this military parade. We're going to have 40-foot banners of his ugly mug shot that, you know, they have doctored up and made look like it's, you know, a portrait-worthy expression. And well, it looks like he's trying to hold in a fart instead, right? So, I don't know. And then, you know, when they tweeted this out, by the way, the context is, you know, there's the Department of Agriculture building. It's 163 years or something of the Agriculture Department. It was created by Lincoln, and they have this giant banner of Lincoln, right? Because, of course, he founded the damn department. But right next to it is this equally large, you know, obnoxious Trump banner. I feel like I'm in like a Mel Brooks movie. Doesn't that kind of feel like that? Like, if you were to make fun of how somebody would seize power in America, like, this is the shit that you would write.
Politics, 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 politics. Yes, the Roman Senate. The Roman Senate is the best legislature that money can buy.
While Trump's intelligence community is digging in with its alternative facts, his FBI had an awkward moment on Fox News over the weekend. Rachel, let's spend a little time covering who said what on the Sunday shows, because come Monday, it's so damn easy to forget about all the news that comes from them.
We really can't afford to forget those Sunday morning shows, especially since no one but people like us watch them.
Right.
And really, what a strange moment on Sunday morning futures with Maria Bartiromo. God, not her again. With Maria Bartiromo, and, you know, forgive me, I'm a bit of copper, so I get some pass on mutilating last names. She had a FBI director and bug eyes, Cash Patel, and deputy director and famous podcast workout guy, Dan Bongino, on the show Sunday. And it was a little, it was a headline producer.
It was weird. The big takeaway from their highly anticipated joint interview, both of them quashed a few long-held right-wing conspiracy theories, including the death of sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein killed himself in a jail cell in 2019, but MAGA has long pushed fake news that Epstein was murdered before he could testify under oath. Well, among those included Cash Patel and Dan Bongino. And listen to this change of heart, which has MAGA in a tizzy.
You said Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide. People don't believe it.
Well, I mean, listen, they have a right to their opinion, but as someone who has worked as a public defender, as a prosecutor, who's been in that prison system, who's been in the Metropolitan Detention Center, who's been in segregated housing, you know a suicide when you see one, and that's what that was.
He killed himself. You want me to get, I've seen the whole file. He killed himself.
That's pretty fucking stunning, because before he was at the FBI, Dan Bongino was like one of the main right-wing media personalities throwing gasoline on all kinds of these wacky MAGA conspiracy theories for years, dude. It's amazing what happens when you're able to peek out of the mud of the right-wing ecosystem and you get thrown into something like the FBI, right? Where reality is just squarely fucking rooted. And they're getting hit with these facts, right?
Right. And when asked about the investigation into another right-wing conspiracy, the two assassination attempts against Trump last year, another big hole in the evidence, as explained by Bongino.
Are we going to be surprised at what you learned?
You know what, Maria? Cash is not kidding. We've been personally briefed extensively on every single detail, nugget, tendril of this case. One is actively in court right now, so out of respect for the case, it's probably more appropriate that I stay quiet on that. However, I'm not going to tell people what they want to hear. I'm going to tell you the truth, and whether you like it or not is up to you. If there was a big explosive there, right, given my history as a Secret Service agent and my personal friendship as a director does with the president, Give me one logical, sensible reason we would not have. If you can think of one, there isn't. There in some of these cases, the there you're looking for is not there. And I know people, I get it. I understand. It's not there. If it was there, we would have told you.
I need to take a shower after all these Fox News clips, dude. Let's head over to NBC's Meet the Press, okay? That's where former VP Mike Pence spent his Sunday morning. And there's a couple of notes from this interview. One, Pence sounded, you know, traditionally like a buttoned-up politician that he is. He spends a lot of time waxing poetic about the old Republican Party and refuses to embrace the fact that Donald Trump has completely killed whatever that party was. He also claimed he and Trump departed amicably, which is pretty weird considering Trump sent a mob to the Capitol to hang him, you know?
We talked for an hour about conversations I'd had with people on the platform. But what saddened me was several months after we left office, he returned to much of the same rhetoric that he had used in the run-up to that fateful day of January 6th. Again, talking again about the election being stolen, suggesting that I could have had the ability to overturn the election. And that was where I just came to the conclusion that we best part ways.
You think?
Well, Rachel, Pence got a little saltier, if that's what you want to call it, when asked about Trump's visit to the Middle East this past week. While getting wined and dined and paraded around by princes and emirs in Saudi Arabia, he said this, referring to the United States of America and its allies, during what looked and felt like a State of the Union address.
In the end, the so-called nation builders wrecked far more nations than they built, and the interventionists were intervening in complex societies that they did not even understand themselves. They told you how to do it, but they had no idea how to do it themselves.
Got that? Here's how Mike Pence reacted.
But Kristen, I've never been a fan of American presidents criticizing America on foreign soil. And to have the president in Saudi Arabia questioning America's global war on terror and describing it as nation building and interventionist, I thought was a disservice to generations of Americans who wore the uniform, who took the fight to our enemy, you know, in Afghanistan and in Iraq.
Especially the approximately 7,085 American service members who made the ultimate sacrifice in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The same heroes Trump described as, quote, suckers and losers.
To a man whose own son died for this country in Arlington, overlooking the graves.
Rachel, let's talk about another Department of Justice matter. It's nice to see two of MAGA's chief propagandists, Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, being forced to admit there is no evidence of the crazy-ass shit they've been peddling for 4 years. But it's not even the most important development we're tracking from Trump's Department of Justice. James Comey, the former director of the FBI, tweeted a picture of seashells arranged in the sand spelling out 8647. Now, in some circles, 86 is slang for to shit can or worse, and 47 could mean the 47th president of the United States, Donald Trump. Long story short, Comey claims he just found the shells like that during a walk on the beach, adding that political violence never occurred to him. Nonetheless, it was considered enough of a threat against Trump that the Secret Service intervened.
Which is so ridiculous. Okay, number one, yes, James Comey is a moron, okay? We know sometimes morons can reach great heights here in America. I mean, just look at who the current president is. Also, you have Giuliani, right? Who's now disgraced, broke, disbarred, and apparently discarded by Trump. He somehow ran the Mother Court, which was the Southern District of New York. I mean, these are prestigious positions. So it's funny, y'all, because the first time I went to one of these anti-Trump rallies, two chicks were walking with this awesome, like, protest umbrella. And I really thought it was cool. And then I was far away, so I saw this number at the bottom, and I stopped them. I'm like, oh, you, what does the text go to, okay? And then I figured out from their reaction, text, well, and looking at the numbers that, oh, it says 8647, right? And I was like, there's no way I can tweet that, you know, never mind, I don't need your picture. And you know, I know you typically 86 mayonnaise on a sandwich or, you know, hot sauce on a burrito or something like that. But if I posted it, of course, MAGA would have come after me and argued that I was trying to get Trump assassinated. By the way, one other point on that, there are hundreds of these kinds of things from Trump world about Biden all through his 4 years. You can see them on the internet. People were selling them. So, yeah, Comey is dumb. Okay, I think we knew that when he got us Donald Trump by breaking Justice Department precedent to try to, you know, impress MAGA, I guess. I don't know what he was doing when he came out with Clinton, but he's going to get investigated harder for a picture of seashells than Pete Hegseth and the rest of the so-called national security team in the Trump administration. They will never be investigated for openly discussing ongoing military missions on Signal.
I know. And it's pretty wild how the standards change depending on where your loyalties are with this administration. We got a good chuckle out of another example, Rachel, from House Speaker Mike Johnson. A reporter recently reminded Johnson about how concerned he was of the Biden family's business dealings and whether he's equally concerned about the Trump family.
Especially given the fact that he is in a region now where his family has billions of dollars of investments in Doha and Saudi Arabia, and the fact that he has a crypto business now where he's auctioned off access to the White House for the highest bidder in his meme coin.
Look, there are authorities that police executive branch ethics rules. I'm not an expert in that. My expertise is here in the House, okay? I'll say that the reason that many people refer to the Bidens as the Biden crime family is because they were doing all this stuff behind curtains, but in the back rooms. They were trying to conceal it, and they repeatedly lied about it, and they set up shell companies, and the family was all engaged in getting all on the dole. Whatever the President Trump is doing is out in the open. They're not trying to conceal anything.
Catch that? The Trump family may be committing crimes, but at least they're doing it out in the open.
That's one thing you can say about Don DeCon, right? He does his crime and right out there in the open for everyone to see. I mean, I guess technically that is one type of transparency. Did you see the reporting from NBC that intern United States Attorney for the District of Columbia, Edward Martin, who is the leader of Trump's aptly named weaponization of government working group? Did you see that news?
I did. In some context, Martin was appointed as acting U.S. Attorney for D.C. because he couldn't get confirmed by the Republican Senate majority. According to reporting by Ryan J. Riley at NBC News, Martin said he planned to name and shame individuals the Justice Department believes it is unable to charge with crimes. And quoting Edward Martin in the NBC story here, there are some really bad actors, some people that did some really bad things to the American people, and if they can be charged, we'll charge them. But if they can't be charged, we'll name them, and we will name them in a culture that respects shame. They should be people that are ashamed.
Spoiler alert, as Dan Bongino and Kash Patel are finding out, there is no evidence, okay? But it sounds like something as stupid as actual evidence won't be an impediment in MAGAtopia. I mean, just think about what this man is saying. He's saying, even if we don't have enough evidence to charge you of a crime, we're here at the DOJ. We're going to use control of the investigative arm of the government to smear the names of people. Now, all of us became legal experts over 10 years, Aaron. So I kind of remember like, oh, they don't share grand jury stuff in case they don't indict because it has reputational costs, right? So like now we're in this world where they're going to name and shame their enemies. I mean, what does that say, right? In a culture that respects shame, they should be people that are ashamed. That is a direct call to action by the MAGA mob to come after people. So over the weekend, I published a piece titled, Trump's Executive Orders Serve One Sinister Purpose, Inside Team Trump's Shrewd Strategy to Kill Democracy. If you missed it, be sure to check it out on the Cycle on Substack. It's linked in our show notes, obviously. I mention it now because MAGA is working hard to normalize ignoring the Supreme Court, just like they primed MAGA for the Jan 6 insurrection by months and months and months of election lies. So anyway, take a listen here as MAGA slob father Steve Bannon lays out the case for ignoring the courts and ending the separation of power system. This is an interview with the Financial Times.
If you're not an American citizen, you're here illegally, there's no due process. And I'm telling you, this is coming to a head. We are going to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. If the courts keep ruling against us and don't allow these mass deportations to continue, just like President Lincoln, this was an invasion. The country's at war. He's commander in chief. It's Article II power. And this is going to come.
Are you predicting that will happen? Or I'm arguing it should happen.
First off, there is going to be a constitutional crisis before the court leaves.
You know, you're going to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. As we discussed last week, that means suspending the Constitution. They will shut down the constitutional order. Bannon also told the Financial Times that Trump will run for a third term and that he will win. Bannon says stuff like this out loud because he knows it will never make the mainstream media news cycle.
Well, to be fair, Aaron, D.C. grifters have books to sell, bashing a man with prostate cancer. So, you know, obviously it's not important when the chief strategist of the MAGA movement is telling you how to overthrow the constitutional order.
Yeah, and a note there, obviously we wish Joe Biden and the rest of the Biden family the best as they navigate what will be a serious medical situation, aggressive prostate cancer.
We sure do. And as to the Biden book mafia, good luck selling that shit now. Anyway, I wish that was the case. Unfortunately, guys, the Biden-bashing MAGA audience is three times the size of any serious media entity. I mean, that's why Bill O'Reilly keeps popping up in my Audible. I mean, I'm a serious student of history, especially in my Audible account. Just all, you know, really, really like top-notch scholarly work. And I keep getting ads for Bill O'Reilly history, right? I mean, you can sell anything over there. So they're going to probably be in that top 10 list for a while, picking on, you know, the political corpse of Joe Biden. I have to say, in case y'all missed this, last week the House had puppy killer Kristi Noem in, and Eric Swalwell put on a masterclass on how to use your little power that you have to expose these freaks and weirdos for what they are.
It really was good. To set up this next clip, the footage shows Representative Swalwell of California showing off a large poster of the obviously altered picture of Kilmer Abrego Garcia's hand, photoshopped terribly, MS-13 on his knuckles. They tried to pass that off as actual tattoos, and then they tried to pass that off as actual evidence that he was a violent gang member.
And they would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for us meddling kids.
Anyway, take a listen as Congressman Swalwell demands an answer from the Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, as to whether the photo, used officially by the White House, was doctored or not. What you can't see, by the way, is Noem refusing to look at the picture.
You agree, though, that this is doctored, is that right?
The same protocols that are
Madam applied Secretary,
to every
I want you to have credibility, and I want you to be taken seriously. Is this doctored or is it not
Sir,
doctored?
I am taken quite seriously.
Is it doctored or not doctored?
With the importance that the president has given me to do
I understand. Is it doctored or not
One thing
doctored?
That's important to remember is that every single time a case is built...
Madam Secretary, I have a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. I have a bullshit detector. I'm just asking you, is this doctored or not doctored?
Sir... The protocols in the case built against
Can you answer the question?
Were exactly the same.
Madam Secretary,
I don't have any knowledge as to that photo you're pointing to.
Okay. Can you take
I
her,
don't, sir.
Can you show
I...
her the photo? Walk her the photo down there. No, that one. Please take a look at this photo. It was tweeted by the president on April 21. It's been hanging out there for about a month.
So what is your point?
That's so funny.
Yeah, dude, she looked as cornered as a gnome family hunting dog being led into a gravel pit.
Ooh, shots fired.
Pardon the pun. That's it, folks. That's all you get for this week. I feel like a court jester juggling 10 pins after this episode. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky. And as always, a big thanks to our subscribers, especially you paid subscribers to The Cycle who are making the show a reality. You can find me at Rachel Bitticoffer on both platforms and on Substack at thecycle.substack.com.
Our book is Hit 'em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game, hitemwhereithurts.com. Rachel, you mentioned the slob father, Steve Bannon, earlier in the show, so let's wrap things up with the actual godfather, Robert De Niro.
I love it. De Niro was honored at the Cannes Film Festival in France a few days ago, and he used the occasion to send a very powerful message to the film industry beyond Hollywood. We think it's an ending you can't refuse.
back next week.
In my country, we are fighting like hell for the democracy we once took for granted. And that affects all of us. That affects all of us here because the arts are democratic. Art is inclusive. It brings people together. Like tonight, art looks for truth. Art embraces diversity. And that's why art is a threat. That's why we are a threat to autocrats and fascists. America's Philistine president has had himself appointed head of one of our premier cultural institutions. He has cut funding and support to the arts, humanities, and education. And now he has announced a 100% tariff on films produced outside the U.S. Let that sink in for a minute. You can't put a price on creativity, but apparently you can put a tariff on it. Of course, this is unacceptable. All these attacks are unacceptable. And this isn't just an American problem. It's a global one. Unlike a film, we can't just sit back and watch. We have to act, and we have to act now. Without violence, but with great passion and determination, it's time for everyone who cares about liberty to organize, to protest, and when there are elections, of course, to vote. Vote.